Penguin Random House Audio presents The Naked Civil Servant by Quentin Crisp. Preface by Michael Holroyd. Read for you by Christian Coulson. Preface. It is a brave writer who attempts a preface to this book. In one sense, The Naked Civil Servant needs no introduction. It says everything with extraordinary precision and force. Mr. Quentin Crisp has been well known to himself for so long that he may suspect he is now internationally famous as one of London's works of art. He may be unlikely to recognize the need for an introduction to American readers. Yet he first came to the attention of the American public only in the fall of 1976, when a dramatic documentary of his life blazed across American television screens. This program produced an astonishing reaction, and rightly so, since it had been based on this most astonishing autobiography. I was in New York the week after it was shown, and everyone seemed not simply to be talking about it, but asking me about him. I told them nothing. A writer is like a weighing machine. Words come only when you put money in. This is a condition of literature which Mr. Crisp has had no difficulty in grasping. In fact, I told them nothing not through professionalism, but ignorance. I have never met Mr. Crisp. Although I am introducing him to you, no one has introduced him to me. This is proper. I am not doing a friend a favor. I am attempting to do you one. You may never meet Mr. Crisp. When he wrote this book, he didn't believe in abroad, except as a nightmare place where everyone makes absurd sounds all around you, until, once you have moved out of earshot, they revert to standard English. On his travels, wherever he may have imagined he was going, he appears never to have reached much beyond High Wycombe, a hamlet 30 miles from London. So his gaunt and mincing figure will never pitter-patter in menacing retreat from you on the sidewalk. You will never be dazzled by the blue hair, orange face, and vermilion lips, or deafened by the roar of his amulets. You are safe from having ludicrously to feign indifference, from being tempted into philistinism or savagery. You meet him in his most convenient shape, which nevertheless conveys the essence of the man. For though he represents himself as a diseased oyster, he has here produced his pearl. It is open to you to see Mr. Crisp as uniquely English, the queen of Queer Street, and a most vivid embodiment of the era of eccentricity that followed the decline of the British Empire. If it were only that, his story would be part of history and of sociology, and no more. Unfortunately, he writes so well that his life grafts itself onto ours. If we are not affected by these pages, then we must be partly dead. For Mr. Crisp does not write exclusively of homosexuality, but of the outcast state in whatever form it may take, anywhere, at any time. Like King Lear, he has exposed himself to feel what wretches feel, and we have taken too little care of that. He challenges our response to anything we think is deeply and unfashionably non-conventional. The response to him in Britain has been terrible, and this has afforded Mr. Crisp some satisfaction. It is his form of revenge. The wonder, and for himself the disappointment, is that he is still alive. God knows how, though his frail body is full of stamina and his spirit wrapped around with cunning and iron politeness. But he should have been killed. That would have ended the business in the most logical way. Fielding's London lives again in these pages, with its squalor and violence. Civilization retreats as Mr. Crisp daintily steps forward. The Naked Civil Servant was first published in Britain in January 1968, and it is interesting now to see what reviewers made of it there. They came certainly not to praise the book, but to bury it with respectability. Simon Gray, in The Listener, called it a brave little tale. Paul Bailey, in The Observer, thought it entertaining. John Whitley gave it marks for candour and charm in the Sunday Times. There is bravery, entertainment, candour, charm. But the discomfort of those critics who did not like the book was preferable to the tepidity of many who did. B.A. Young in Punch called it a book full of self-pity. The critic of the Times Literary Supplement, revolted by the intolerably arch and jaunty manner, read it with total absence of compassion, as did Mary Conroy in the London Times. Accepting it without emotion, she complimented the author on having exploited so well his gift for unpopularity. These critics had felt the threat. Best of all was The Scotsman, which optimistically placed it among the week's fiction. Only Irish reviewers recognised the bleak wit and insight and did not look away. And it is with an Irish writer that I see The Naked Civil Servant having affinities. To the English, Mr. Crisp has appeared as one of the more flamboyant inventions of Evelyn Waugh, but his world is closer to that of Samuel Beckett. My relations with Jackson were of short duration. I could have put up with him as a friend, but unfortunately he found me disgusting, as did Johnson, Wilson, Nicholson, and Watson, all whoresons. I then tried for a space to lay hold of kindred spirits among the inferior races, red, yellow, chocolate, and so on. And if the plague-stricken had been less difficult of access, I would have intruded on them too, ogling, sidling, leering, ineffing and canating, my heart palpitating. With the insane, too, I failed by a hair's breadth. Mr. Crisp would, I believe, recognize this scene as being very near to his own life. He shares with Beckett this desolation and disgust, and the wonderful ability to free it from all sentimentality, to breathe vitality and humor into it, to give it style. Mr. Crisp is a master of the inverted cliché. He stands the world of the dead normals on its head. He makes it truly dead. In his first sentence, Mr. Crisp refers to himself as having been disfigured by homosexuality. He has not hidden this disfigurement, but tried to find a way of turning guilt and humiliation, fear, hatred, and all his other crippling disadvantages into enviable assets. He converted his body into a fantastic vehicle called Quentin. He had been christened Dennis. Fashioned for propaganda and amusement. If he could not command love, at least he could get attention. By dressing up so as to attract maximum hostility, he transferred the guilt and hatred to ordinary conventional people. He set great store by their bad opinion and became a connoisseur of different classes of enmity. "Nobody escapes my love," he tells us. But almost everyone has tried. There are no sympathetic characters in real life. In the 1920s, Mr. Crisp became a walking tutor to London and was kept going by his evangelical zeal. Though girls could be boyish, men still had to be men, and homosexuality was felt to be something classical and far distant, vaguely Greek. Mr. Crisp brought it up to date and gave it a bad name, like cancer. Freud's works were then for the first time being translated into English, and as the climate changed, Mr. Crisp hurriedly jumped off the bandwagon and switched from reform to entertainment. Peace came to him with the Second World War. Utopia had temporarily arrived, imported by Americans in uniform. Mr. Crisp adores Americans. "I was by nature American," he writes. So, over to you. Since the war, the Quentin vehicle has apparently overshot its mark.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?